Welcome everyone to episode 14 of the Thundercast. This is the second half of our BioShock Infinite grand discussion, big old bonanza. I'm Matthew Sorry, and joining me today I have Shane Ryan.
Hello.
And Nick Hall.
Hello.
Alright guys, so this is our big massive spoiler-filled discussion of everything BioShock Infinite. We've all completed the game now, so we're going to talk about everything, including what we thought about the ending, what happens in the story, what it means for the events of the game before the ending. So if you don't want to hear spoilers for BioShock Infinite, then just wait a while, wait a few weeks, wait until you've finished it, and then come back, alright? Okay, so let's kick things off right at the end then. Shane, what did you think of the ending of this game?
I guess what the ending was going to be.
When did you guess that?
Quite early on. But then I started to doubt myself as things went all wacky and weird, and I thought, oh, maybe it's not going to be that. And then it came back round and was.
Yeah. I kind of got the feeling that it was going to go somewhere towards the idea of a multiverse, which is where it went. And there's kind of hints from the Lutece twins throughout when they pop up and everything goes slightly strange and surreal.
There's a moment, and I don't know what it was, but instantly I just thought, this Comstock, I just thought, it's him.
Yeah.
He's going to have to kill him or himself. Hmm. And all the first thing that came to my head was, Looper came out recently. That's a bit ill-timing.
That was my point that I was going to bring up. It's a very very similar twist, isn't it?
Yeah, very similar sort of thing where all these different parallels cross. And the reason I think it confused a lot of people, but stuff like this usually doesn't confuse me, is that I always think of time as a dot anyway. If you think of time as like a timeline, it gets really confusing. But this game and things like Looper considers time as a dot. You can just kind of go through and back through, and everything's like past, present, and now is all now sort of thing.
They all exist, every possible eventuality. I think I'm sure someone describes it as a tree at some point. Maybe not in the game, maybe that's something that I've listened to afterwards.
I think there's an audiobook where the twins are kind of going on about time and how you to think of it as one timeline is stupid. But I do think we're talking about the ending, but that concept of alternative universes and different timelines and stuff does get a little bit confusing. In the middle.
It is a very confusing premise in and of itself.
Which is kind of inevitable every time you use... It's like films that use time travel or alternative universes. It always gets a bit muddled and confusing. But
do you think the idea was... do you think it was well conveyed? Did it come across quite well to you? Did you understand what was going on when you got to the very end of the game?
I mean, for me, it's, as long as it makes sense at the end, that's all that matters. It can be absolute carnage throughout, as long as at the end you go, right. I didn't want it to be too explained, and there's actually a moment where I thought it was the end, and I thought, holy shit, this is an ending, and it wasn't the end.
Is that when you end up in Rapture?
No.
All right.
When you're back in New York.
All right,
And I just thought, holy shit, if the credits roll now, this is going to be absolutely incredible.
I thought it was going to end there.
Oh, damn it.
I agree. I thought that would have been a brilliant ending, but I just thought there was so much left unexplained. Like, you hadn't learned who Comstock was or anything like that.
The Comstock's identity, I kind of got that fairly quickly, just because there's a certain type of story which that's a sort of recurring theme when you have to have a twist and you're always thinking, what is the twist going to be? And you almost kind of... You have several options in your mind, so when it does happen, it's not particularly surprising.
Especially so with the BioShock game, because we all know we've all played the first one. We all know what the big twist was there.
We were all
thinking, well, it can't be his son, because that would just be like too similar to the original game. But he's got to be some kind of relation to him. It's very heavily hinted at.
But I mean, what you said before, what you mentioned, which you avoided on the previous podcast, It's a bit where you go in basically after baptism again, because if you consider what it means at the ending when he said no, but then you have to do it to get into the city, and that's those kind of massive nods that it gives so early on, and the bird and the bird in the cage kind of necklace stuff.
Yeah, and there's actually a point when you first go into the lighthouse, and you can choose whether you wash yourself. There's like a knitting that says "wash away thy sins" before whatever, and you can choose to wash it. And if you actually choose to try and wash yourself in that basin, Booker looks in it and he says, "Not a chance."
Yeah,
because you are the Booker that has not chosen to be baptized.
Which in all these time, which in all these parallel events, is where things changed.
Yeah. So I feel like, should we give just a slight overview of what actually happens at the end to give some context? Because we might get some people listening to this who want to listen to what the ending is without actually having played it, as Rose is.
So
it turns out, oh God, I'm going to get muddled and knot myself up here, but it kind of turns out that Booker and Comstock are one and the same people, and one and the same person, but in different dimensions, in different multiverses, in different universes. So it's very heavily sci-fi based on the idea that there are multiverses, that every single possible eventuality that could happen, could ever happen in the history of everything, does exist. They exist in parallel to each other. And the idea is that the scientist, a woman named Lutece, that actually came up with the technology that allows Columbia to float in the sky, came up with this other technology that allows you to travel between these multiverses. So you've got this character, Booker DeWitt, did all these horrible things in the war of the Battle of Wounded Knee, all of these famous historical American battles. He killed lots of the natives in America. He felt very bad about it. So he went to go and get baptized. And at that point, there was two eventualities. He could either choose to get baptized or he could choose not to get baptized. And both of those eventualities happened in different universes. In one of them, where he got baptized, he became a religious zealot and turned into Comstock and created this city, Columbia. In the other one, he became Booker DeWitt, the Pinkerton agent, and
alcoholic gambler.
Yeah, alcoholic gambler, cannon for hire, and not generally a very nice person, but not very nice person in either dimension, really.
Nope.
So the idea behind Comstock is that he met Lutece, founded this great city in the sky. That's all history. And Lutece has got this technology where you can transfer between dimensions. They experiment with it. Because Comstock experiments with it, he becomes infertile. So he decides to go through to the dimension in which Booker isn't infertile, and he's Booker DeWitt. He's got a child called Anna. He basically gives him the offer of bring us the child and wipe away the debt, because that Booker's in a lot of debt. Booker accepts his offer, takes Anna to Comstock. Comstock takes her through to his universe. And the events of Bioshock Infinite are set in motion by the Lutece twins, or one of the Lutece twins, bringing Booker through to that universe to get Elizabeth back.
You see what I mean?
And in the meantime, he loses, basically his memory gets fried in the process.
Yes.
So he basically forgets a lot of what's happened.
Yeah, there's that quote at the start about the subject will create memories where another exists to try and explain the world that he's in or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So you've got lots of muddled memories at the start about what you're doing. Bring us the girl and wipe away the debt actually has a different meaning to what you believe it does.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is kind of like a thought experiment on the behalf of the Lutece twins. It's they're doing an experiment with Booker almost. There's lots more to it. That's just a very general overview, but
concise. I'm quite impressed.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, from the very beginning, it felt that the story was telling me that no matter what happened, Booker was not going to come to a good end.
Yeah,
because it pretty much throughout it, the things always, you know, you can try and change what's happened, but it always ends up the same, and you can't wash things away. Mm.
So that is the idea. And you brought up Looper. So the very ending. Booker comes to this realization of what's been happening, what he did. He sold his child, Anna, who is now called Elizabeth in Comstock's universe, and he's raised her. And the reason that Elizabeth has these powers, you actually brought it up in the previous podcast, Nick, that you didn't understand why Elizabeth had these powers, or it wasn't explained to you. I found a voxophone where Lutece explains why she has these powers, and it's basically because she is from another dimension. Which doesn't quite explain it for me, because so is Booker and he doesn't have these powers, but it's kind of loosely explained. But what was I going to say? Yeah, Booker and Elizabeth basically decide that to stop all of this bad stuff from happening, to stop Comstock turning her into this woman that will take over his reign and destroy the Sodom below, as he calls it, They must go back and kill Comstock. But the only way to do that is for them to go back to the point where Booker was baptized and drown him before he gets baptized or chooses not to get baptized, therefore killing the two eventual Bookers that would be Booker DeWitt and Comstock.
It's that simple, everyone.
It's really that simple.
Do you see what I mean? There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yes. That's not even including what happens in the first half of the game, which is completely irrelant to all of that.
No. Yeah, there's the whole social uprising,
civil unrest,
Fox Populi. There's so much. You are right, Nick. There is so much to this game and so much detail. And I've got to say, I finished the game. That final cutscene where all the Elizabeths appear from all these different eventualities, all these different multiverses, and they drown you, and then they all slowly disappear as all of those potential futures disappear themselves. I was a little confused as to what happened. I got the idea that Booker was Comstock and there was this point in time where it split off.
Yep.
But I kind of found myself swimming in my head and thinking of, well, if that's the case, why did this happen in the game? And if that's the case, why doesn't Booker have these powers? That I kind of like felt like there was a lot of things that weren't explained.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's lots that's... It's probably all written down somewhere. It's just putting it into a game, isn't it? Again, it's trying to keep the pace in, but I think overall it does a pretty good job of containing all of that, including what happens in the first half.
Yeah,
into quite a neat parcel. And what I followed on from what happens in Bioshock as well is, it's again what I enjoyed was the idea of an idea taken to the furthest possible point.
Yeah.
So Bioshock is all about man deciding that God is dead and trying to create a utopia, and what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Infinite is all about a man deciding that essentially, he is now God, and that he is going to create the ultimate future, and then, lo and behold, what happens?
Yeah.
You know, horrible oppression to everyone else.
Yeah.
So it's this idea that what utopia really is the ultimate oppression of people, which is basically the theme that runs between both the games, which I like quite a lot.
It's quite a dark sort of theme, if you think about it, because the concept basically is that any ideology can be twisted into something monstrous. So you get the socialist Vox Populi, who are the good guys at the start, or at least, you know they're not. But, I mean, they're the ones who've got something to fight for, and you feel that they're justified in doing that. But then the way the game plays out, when they get power, it's not just as easy as them restoring.
They just kill everyone in hatred.
They basically murder everyone else because it swung the other way.
I really enjoyed how
revenge,
you end up going through those rifts and all hell breaks loose, and you come back to a point where you have caused an uprising, but it wasn't you. So you come back in.
It was a different Booker, wasn't it?
Yeah, so you've gone back and all hell has broken loose, and everyone's like, oh, you know, you've caused this uprising, you've helped us kill these people, and you're like, what? What's going on?
Yeah, there was one eventuality where you got all those guns for the Vox Populi, and when you did them, you gave them absolute power, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that point, that sort of, I guess it's the middle. I think it felt roughly in the middle.
Mm.
That was when the thing about slipping into alternative universes sort of comes up, and I did get a bit confused as to, if I go here and I get the guns, how am I getting back? Because I'm now in this universe. Where do I go from here? And if I get back,
am I in a different universe?
That's
bonkers, doesn't it? And the timeline,
as it were, gets fractured,
and you end up like losing 6 months, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end, it kind of, you can, in your own mind, connect the dots. But I mean, like I say, when you're dealing with time travel or interdimensional travel and stuff, it's going to get a bit messy and confusing.
I felt it was messy and confusing at points, but I did feel like they did an excellent job of trying to get it across, because like, it's almost, you've got to accept that it's going to be slightly messy and confusing because it is so complicated, the idea that they went for in the end.
Yeah, no. And I think by the end of it, it does come together.
Mm.
And I think the ending is very much fitting for the series as well.
Yeah.
And interesting for the future of the series as well.
I can't help but think that that story would have made for a really good story after there'd been like 3-4 Bioshock games, if you will.
Yeah, that actually rounded it all up and you physically through them all. Yeah,
because there's kind of a point that's made at the end of the game that in all of these multiverses, there's always this story that's going to happen.
There's always a lighthouse.
Yeah. There's always an incredible world, or there's always like a figurehead of that world and things like that.
That's what I mean, though. It's like I was thinking, why? Why are there those three things? Yeah, why are those the only three things?
It's because of... It's not cause and effect. What do they call it? There's those two words they use. Constants and variables, which is what they keep saying. Which is that no matter how many variables are, in every multiverse, there's always a lighthouse. There's always a duet. So it's this idea that there's directions people can take, but no matter what, there's always going to be a lighthouse.
So the only tear in the universe that she can create is to another universe that shares these three unifying...
No, all of them do.
No, the constant. Every single universe. I think probably then the idea would be that the universe as we know it is built upon a set of physical rules, physics rules, whatever it is. So there will always be that eventuality where there is always a lighthouse, there is always this story to be told
in every one
of those universes. Because of the fundamental rules of the universe.
Mm.
Which is quite a cool idea.
So there's always a Bioshock place, which is either in the sea, in the ground, underneath Leeds, in the air, just outside Japan, wherever it happens to be. And there's always a lighthouse that connects them all.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, that bit is quite cool. That bit at the end when you're kind of walking between the different lighthouses and you're thinking in your head, what the hell is behind all of these different ones?
Because it's really important as well that it lets you choose which lighthouse you want to go into, but it's always the same because it's always the constant.
Yeah.
It's such a simple... They didn't have to build that out. It'd just be a linear path in any of the game, but it's such a clear
It's got significance. There's a reason, without that, the story wouldn't have made much sense. And it's such a small thing. They could have given you one path, but the idea is that whichever one you take, there's always going to be this. This is the constant.
Mm-hmm. Mm. The variable is you're picking which road, but the constant is you're always going to end up back at this baptism.
Mm.
Which is crazy, but it's a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, because there is quite a lot of DLC planned for this game, so I'm just wondering how that's going to work. Mm. Because it is quite a final ending.
Yeah, I think there's lots of things they could do. Stories just inside Columbia, not necessarily playing with the sci-fi idea, maybe a little bit of it, but just stories inside Columbia.
That's what they did with Bioshock 2, isn't it? They took another character that was briefly in the first place and did another story set in the same area. So, that could be interesting. Or I guess the idea of alternate universes fits quite well with DLC.
Yeah,
you pretty much do what you want.
Maybe you play out that universe where Booker sacrifices himself for the Vox Populi,
or the one where Elizabeth has just ruined everyone's shit.
Yeah,
that was cool. That was a really good moment. Mm-hmm.
There's another question that I have that I can figure out. How did Comstock know that Booker was coming? Because he knows that he's prophesied it, he's seen the false prophet, he's got signs of...
Because it's a constant,
this
isn't
guy.
It?
Plus, he stole the baby as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he stole the baby, but he closed off the portal to his universe, multiverse, and the loot... Yeah, I just don't know how... Maybe it's something that the Lutetis knew
I'm
was
sure,
a constant.
Yeah, I'm sure they said something. I'm sure there's something mentioned.
Mm. Yeah.
Why he knows everything.
That's just the one kind of unexplained question in my head.
You just think about the motivations of Lucrece and her alternate... I guess he's her from another universe where...
I couldn't tell if the brother and sister or they
were
married.
No.
It's weird.
The idea is that they're the same the same person, but in one universe he was born a boy
man,
and in one universe
she was born a
girl.
But I was trying to work out their
motivations. That's why they finish each other's sentences and things like that.
Because they help steal the baby.
Yeah.
So the idea that Elizabeth is the one who can close the loop of Booker because she can get to that point at the ending.
Possibly, because they already know what's going to happen because everything has happened, whatever they say it.
Because I think they're quite cool and sort of enigmatic characters that you don't know. Mm-hmm. But at the same time,
it's like the
G-Man
in Half-Life, isn't it? Where you think he's the bad guy, but then you're like, wait, is he? What's he doing?
Yeah, we'll probably find out in 13 years when they release the next one.
I don't think it'd be as good as this. They got some going to go now.
See, now you've talked about that constants and variables thing, Shane. It's just got me thinking about things, and there's that part where you flip the coin and it's always heads. And she writes down heads for the 122nd time, and she's like, I thought it could have been different. And there's loads of interesting things like that.
Yeah, early on, it tells you there's lots of those very clever hints. If you go back and play it, you'll notice it.
There's the he doesn't roar comment at the very start, which when I first played it, I was like, what? what are they on about? Are they, like,
it's like an in-joke.
Yeah, it's an in-joke for them.
There's lots of different bits, like, you know, the bit where you're going towards, I can't remember which bit you're going towards, but they're on the Lucrece and her brother are on different sides of this skyline, and they're kind of talking, and I couldn't remember what they said, and I really wanted to go back and play that bit to see what they were saying tied into the ending. So this, I think it rewards a second playthrough just for that.
Yeah, definitely. No, like my second playthrough now, there is so much that I am noticing, so many little details throughout the game, literally not just in the intro to the game, throughout the game, that I'm noticing that really makes sense. There's that part that's kind of in the intro, it's in the middle of the intro, where there's a statue that you come across, and it kind of warps into, it's of the Lutece. I want to say twins, but they're not. It's of Lutece, and it's of the male Lutece, but it kind of warps into the female Lutece, which is I don't know, like, it's just crazy. Like, that happened, and first time I was playing it, I had absolutely no idea why it was happening, but the second time you play through, it makes sense. Like, there's lots of extra world building there that only makes sense when you get the idea that this is a multiverse.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's like a good quality film when you go back and watch it, so they must have thought, you know, if we make this a strong enough story, people are going to want to play it again.
Yeah.
And if we put these bits in where they go, oh, right, yeah, the second time, and the in-jokes that you're then in on, because you understand what's going to happen.
Definitely. Yeah. It is definitely an onion.
But there is part of me that really wanted that New York ending to be the ending.
Yeah. That would have been pretty cool.
You don't really get dark endings in video games.
No. So what did you think of the actual combat ending section, the big, like, defend this airship bit, because I thought that was a little bit annoying.
Yeah, it's very respawn. You could see the respawn happening, and it was like, the big giant songbird thing, which was great, and I love the fact that you actually got to use that.
It
reminds me of, like, kind of like the owl thing from an old, like, Sinbad sort of film, you know, where you get, like, the mechanical beast or some sort of creature that gets befriended and
The whole world has that sort of fairy tale aspect, doesn't it? The concept of her being locked in a tower and then a guardian that's sort of protective but also keeping her, you know, locked away, like everything. But I felt that Songbird was slightly underused.
Definitely.
You never really got the sense that he wasn't ever a big enough threat, I didn't think. Like, he didn't turn up enough.
No.
You
never actually fight him.
You don't.
Kind of in structured sequences, not cutscenes, because you can control the camera, but structured narrative sequences. He's kind of like, he's attacking you, but you don't ever fight him. You use him. He becomes an ally in the end when Elizabeth calms it down.
Yeah. But there's a scene at the end which I thought could have been a really powerful scene, but it fell a bit flat because
it dives into the tower.
When he's drowning.
Massive spoiler, when Elizabeth tears you through to rapture.
Yeah. And he can't exist underwater. Well, it's pressure or something, isn't it?
It's air pressure.
Crushes him.
But I felt that if that would have been a really nice moment if there'd been more of an exploration of that character.
Because I don't really know, like, I left the game not knowing really what Songbird was, whether it was a person inside there, why it was doing the things it was doing.
It's definitely a character, I think, that's been cut down since an original idea. Because, like you said, the way it turns around and then at end bit, you can tell it's supposed to be pitched as is essentially the dog that dies at the end, sort of thing.
Aggro and Shadow of the Colossus.
But then it never really explains it. And like you said, is it someone in there? And when you say that, I think it probably is. It's probably attached to something.
Yeah, that's kind it's of funny. What I thought you would. It would be like Star Wars Empire Strikes Back kind of thing, where you take the helmet off and you reveal that it's
his dad.
It's his dad. It's another Booker. Shit, that would have been amazing.
Or Andrew Ryan sitting in there.
That'd have been weird.
That would have been weird. Yeah,
it's a big daddy in it.
It's like a Russian doll. This is just a smaller something, and then a smaller one. But you probably go through the game a second time and find an audio tape somewhere.
See, that's the thing. There probably is an audio tape somewhere that explains it that we haven't found. But definitely felt underdeveloped to me.
Mm.
Did everyone get stabbed in the hand as well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What?
Oh, I guess you didn't then.
I might have done. I just
You have a bandage over your hand for the rest of the game if you do.
Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't.
There's a choice at the start of the game where you can... what is it? Like, there's a guy that's on the phone you go up to and you ring a bell. It's just when you've just got Elizabeth. Yeah, you're trying to get tickets to somewhere.
Oh, I pulled my gun.
Yeah, that's it.
If you don't, then you get stabbed in the hand and then Elizabeth wraps it, and for the rest of the game you've got like a blue bandage.
Mm-hmm. I really like little bits like that. I think that's really good. It's like when you get a choice between giving Elizabeth a necklace in the shape of a cage and one in the shape of a bird. And I always thought, well, bird suggests freedom.
Yes.
So that seemed like the natural thing to pick.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, interesting.
Mm. It's kind of like the point in the last episode of The Walking Dead where you can choose to take Lee's arm off or not. And then he spends the rest of the game without an arm.
Yeah, it's like an environmental choice. It doesn't change.
Yeah, it doesn't make that much of a difference, but it's just like a piece of character building that's you choose and that kind of involves you in him a bit more.
It's like going back to the old RPG days when you could give a character a name, although it made no difference other than, you know, the text. It didn't really mean anything, but it's that extra little attachment into the world that you've made some sort of change. It would be nice if they put more of that in there, but it's good to have a few bits and pieces.
Yeah. So, like, in terms of the rest of the game, there was only really one other element, because obviously we discussed this in the last podcast about what an incredible world Irrational have made and how it really draws you in. But there was one big thing that really I felt confused about and that didn't really draw me in as much, and that was the Vigors. They kind of felt like, well, we need magical powers, because Bioshock had magical powers, so let's throw in the Vigors. And they didn't really explain them in the context of the world. And when you think about Bioshock, the... lots of its sci-fi kind of slant was about manipulating genetics, and the idea that the population of Rapture became addicted to Adam and Eve, the substances that allowed them to have these incredible superpowers almost. Mm-hmm. Whereas Vigors were just kind of there. They weren't really, they were invented by Fink, but not really explained very well. And it just didn't fit in the world of Columbia for me, this world that was about racial purity and about Christian beliefs and values. I didn't quite buy that they would have this invention that allowed you to completely change the person that you were and give you magical powers.
Well, yeah, it'd be like the devil's juice, everyone. Wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and some of the, like this, what is it? The devil's kiss is advertised as that. And it just didn't really fit in the world as well as the plasmids did for me. And in a game that's a lot all about world building, all about that kind of immersion, that seemed like a strange thing to me. It just felt like they had to have it because it was a Bioshock game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I didn't think about that at all when I was playing it, but when you brought it up. Yeah, it definitely doesn't sit as easily as
which goes
some
back
of the
to what
things.
You said, Nick, is Matt, why didn't he have more of the rift powers if he came through? And surely they could have just twisted it so he used it that way, because no one else in the game, from what I remember, uses any of these vigors. It's not like an enemy picks one up and starts throwing fireballs. They've got guns that shoot it instead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was kind of a missed opportunity as well, and doesn't really make
weird
sense.
Anyway.
Yeah, they do use them though, don't they? That's what I thought that they were using.
I don't think they use them in the way that you use them in terms of firing. Well, there's like a structure
where
you go through
about,
the door.
Don't
they? Yeah.
It's weird.
Teleportation guy. Yeah, but that didn't really make much sense to me. And you're right, Shane. Like, there could have been like a narrative thing about, well, you've been brought through. Maybe you get those powers, or maybe it was something the Lutece twins were working on, and they brought them through from a different multiverse or something. I don't know. It just didn't really.
It almost seems like the way they had them in the first game, where they had those sort of. Period adverts and with all the illustrations and stuff and the little videos and everything. They always thought, well, that works so well. It's a shame to stop having that in it. Mm-hmm. So they just went ahead and did it and thought, well, people will just say that they're just something else that we don't have to cover. But like you said, again, there might be a little videotape in there somewhere that explains
that's the thing.
All of it.
There's so many voxophones that I think I missed. That there could be an explanation in there somewhere that I've missed.
Yeah.
And they're selling them at the carnival, aren't they? And I know what you mean. It's just odd that... Again, that I didn't think about it, because I just picked them up and thought, oh yeah, it's Bioshock, that. I thought it was like a connection to the game, but if you actually have it stand alone and think about what it means... Again,
well, you
like
think about it, it was all about purity and the Sodom below, getting away from the Sodom below. And you would think that, like, the kind of thing that the Vigors are, they allow you to change yourself into anything you want to be, which I would have thought would have been quite a scary concept for such, such restrained and people.
I thought what they would do originally was they'd have the Vigors a sort of maintained by the ruling class, which is in that case was the whites, basically, wasn't it? And then there'd be something about the power to the people, like the resistance would get hold of. I thought that might come up, but that didn't really. It was all just about getting guns. But yeah.
Good old carbines.
Yeah, that carbine was a
beast.
That's
what you need.
Yeah. It's funny that everyone used that same weapon.
It was ridiculous.
Just worked.
Yeah, very good. So anyone got anything else? Positive, negative, any other problems with the game?
It's just that it's really well written overall. So even though there's these little flaws here and there and things don't make sense, for a game to tackle some of these issues just shows that when you have people writing a game, they need to be involved in the process. So when you have somebody writing, for example, a screenplay or a film, they understand film. And simply going to a film writer and saying, oh, do you want to write a video game for us? It doesn't work. It doesn't work. You can't just slap a script into something.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. It has to evolve and it has to latch on together. Again, like this figure thing, it's probably a point when they thought it doesn't make much sense, but they had to take the hit because gameplay wise, it's what people wanted. Yeah, it's what people wanted. So they just made it kind of colourful and make, you know, the colours fit in. So you give and take, and it just shows that it needs to be more internal and writers just need to be clever rather than trying to be clever, like Far Cry 3.
And I think the thing is, there was a hell of a lot of intelligent writing in this, and the way the story plays out is very smartly told. And we touched upon it in the previous podcast, and there is kind of that issue where half the game feels like you're just wandering through a, not necessarily a film, but an interactive narrative. Where it's kind of not interactive for a while, there's not much gameplay, you're just watching things. And then it cuts to gameplay and you're shooting things. It does suffer a little bit from that, but I thought that Bioshock Infinite was actually quite a lot better than most other games that are like that, because you have a context for why you're shooting things. There's an absolutely crazy, devout, zealot, religious population that think that you're the devil. They're trying to kill you, so that kind of makes sense. And then you've got a civil war going on, so it does make sense. But I did kind of feel that disconnect again.
Yeah, I think we're getting to the point now, really, where people are massively burning out on just shooting everything.
Yeah, usually,
and again, how much more can we just get more of the same?
Yeah,
so I'm worried about Killzone, like on the PS4. It's going to look nice, but after this and anything else that comes out in the meantime, it's going to be an uphill battle if it's just we're under attack, kill everyone.
Yeah.
There's no narrative. Yeah. You don't care about anyone. It's over in 5 hours.
Yeah. But I think I've obviously got I don't think it's a perfect game by any means. I've got a lot of issues with it, but I think a lot of them are born out of the fact that it's so good at so many things. It's kind of the equivalent of the Uncanny Valley effect, where when a game gets so good, you start to become so picky and you notice things that just don't quite fit, like me noticing the Vigors in a game that wasn't Bioshock. I probably wouldn't have picked up on that. I just would have accepted it and rolled with it. But it's kind of stood out because Bioshock is such a well-rounded world and such a well-developed world.
Yeah, definitely. It would just be nice to see the amount of imagination put into this in a few more games. Because I think, in terms of just a vision and creating world building, it's just so far ahead of everything else.
Yeah, it's practically peerless, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Brilliant. All right, guys. Well, that's it for our second trip to Colombia and our spoiler-filled discussion of the ending and the narrative. If you want to let us know what you thought of Bioshock Infinite, head on over to thunderboltgames.com and check out the forums. Or, alternatively, contact us on Twitter @_thunderbolt or via email podcast@thunderboltgames.com. From me is goodbye. From Shane.
Goodbye.
And from Nick.
Goodbye. Fuck, my cat just bit me. Sorry.
You're holding back a squeal of pain there.
Bastard.
Oh dear, should we get started?
Yeah.